In Brussels today, ministers of the Common Market Six have been trying to reach a package agreement on their farming policy differences. And in Ottawa, American and Canadian ministers have been meeting to discuss their country's attitudes to the common market. There's nobody more directly interested in both the Brussels and Ottawa discussions than the minister in charge of British negotiations on the common market, Mr. Edward Heath. Mr. Heath's just back himself from Washington and Ottawa, and I've been talking to him about what he learned there. Mr. Heath, just how upset were the Canadians about the prospect of Britain joining the common market?
Well, I think the Canadian government understands the reasons why the United Kingdom has entered into negotiations with the members of the European Economic Community to see whether it is possible for us to obtain suitable arrangements for the Commonwealth and also, of course, for the other countries in the European Free Trade Association and for British agriculture. They emphasized again to me the tremendous interests which Canada has at stake in any trading arrangements we make with Europe. What I was particularly anxious to talk to them about were the arrangements for consultation while these negotiations are going on. We have, over these past few months, tried to keep in the closest consultation with all the Commonwealth countries. This is quite an undertaking, too, when one gets down to the practical business of doing it in negotiations of this kind. But during these next few months, we shall see negotiations gradually speeding up, and there'll be a faster tempo in Brussels.
Will the Canadians trust you now to carry on these negotiations without constantly referring to them, or will they go on trying to get information one way or another?
Well, I think they will trust us. The Canadian Finance Minister, Mr. Donald Fleming, said at our press conference after the talks that they had complete confidence that the United Kingdom would do its utmost to get suitable conditions for Commonwealth trade. When you say, will they try to get information, it's not them trying to get information. We want to give them the information. And what I was arranging was a means whereby that could be done.
You've said that Britain is not prepared to go into the common market just at any price. What price do you and the Canadians consider to be reasonable?
Canada actually is a Commonwealth country which is affected by a very large number of them, because Canada's trade with us includes the temperate foodstuffs, wheat and so on, and also raw materials like aluminium and wood pulp and newsprint, and also to a certain extent manufactured goods. And therefore Canada's interests are spread very widely.
Is your visit to Canada the beginning of a whole series of top-level meetings with other Commonwealth leaders now?
I have no plans at the moment to go to the other Commonwealth countries, but of course we take every opportunity we can of talking to Commonwealth leaders at all levels, both the members of their governments and their officials.
When you were in Washington, Mr. Heath, did you find that the President of America's interest or pressure on us to join the common market was less than it had been before? This is an impression we've had in London.
Well, the American administration has always stated its position very clearly about this. They would like to see the United Kingdom a member of the European Economic Community because of the strengthening which they believe it would give to Europe, to the community, economically and politically. I believe that situation remains exactly the same. They are just as interested in our membership for that reason.
Do you think there's any awakening alarm amongst American big businessmen at the possibility of the economic challenge of a united Europe, including Britain?
I don't think there's alarm. Of course, there are certain parts of American industry and American trade which will undoubtedly be affected by any arrangement, and they too naturally are anxious that this should be safeguarded as far as possible. But I think the President has shown a realization that this is going to be a very great trading bloc, and he wishes to obtain the weapons with which he can deal with the trading bloc as an American group. And that is why he's asking for these additional powers under the tariff legislation about which he's just spoken. He wants to be able to deal on a level with the trading situation in Europe. And I think that is a good thing, because it shows that America would like to see a lowering of their tariffs together with a general lowering of tariffs in the European group.
Gambling-minded people say that there's a 50-50 chance of Britain going into the common market. Would you accept that assessment?
Well, there are two things that I always stop myself doing at the moment. The first is to speculate about what the chances are, and the second is to try to give some indication of when we're going to see results. Because I think it's much more important at the moment that we should press on with these negotiations as we're doing and use our time and energy in doing that rather than speculating on the chances or when it's going to happen.
the common market is now firmly established as a separate power grouping in Western Europe. That, it seems to me, is the important conclusion to be drawn from the successful outcome of all those very tough negotiations that have been going on here in Brussels for so long. The fact that the common market and the United States are going to reduce by one-fifth their tariffs on a wide range of manufactured goods is undoubtedly important. It will take time, of course, for the effects to percolate into the ordinary channels of trade. What is of outstanding importance is that the agreement has been made by six separate governments in Western Europe acting as one single authority. It's a milestone on the long march towards European unity. So there's obviously a feeling of relief and optimism in Brussels about all this. At the same time, it is fully recognized that there are still a lot of very awkward problems on the horizon, and they could cause endless trouble. Those officials who played a part in the bargaining that led to the agricultural agreement 2 or 3 days ago are very conscious of the fact that they're on the point of entering once again into some very exhausting negotiations, this time with the British government. The Lord Privy Seal, Mr. Heath, will be attending a meeting here tomorrow and will be given a first-hand account from the experts of the terms of this agreement. Its precise details will not be fully known for another week or so. It depends on how soon the rules and regulations that are involved in this extraordinarily comprehensive compromise can be put on paper in language that is acceptable to the lawyers. Once that's been done, and the details carefully scrutinized, it should be possible for the British government to begin their agricultural talks with the common market. And the best estimate here is that it will be in about 4 weeks' time. Meanwhile, the experts have been continuing their analysis of Commonwealth trade in preparation for later negotiations. Today, their work was concerned in the main with the problems of the underdeveloped parts of the Commonwealth. The aim is to classify them under different headings so as to make it easier for the ministers to review them when the time comes. For instance, there's the position of industrial exports from India, Pakistan, and Hong Kong, of African and West Indian exports in relation to those from the former French colonies, and so on. A preliminary report on the work of the experts will be considered at tomorrow's ministerial meeting. And it seems that some sort of timetable will be fixed with the aim of speeding things up.
Mr. Woolley, just what is it that the farmers are worried about if in fact we do go into the common market?
Well, I think that the whole tone of the debate this afternoon showed that, that the farmers of this country are quite prepared to compete within the common market or anywhere else, as long as the conditions give them a proper opportunity so to do. But over many years in this country, we have been concerned to build a structure which gives good value to the consumers of the country, and at the same time gives the farmers a basis of stability and a structure within which to work. And you know all the variabilities there are in agricultural production, weather, disease, and imports, all the rest of these things. We have a reasonable structure under our present system whereby we can plan ahead and we can make progress in the efficiency of the industry on the basis of stability. Now, the common market countries have had the greatest difficulty in finding the broadest measure of agreement, as we know only too well, for their own circumstances. In their circumstances, it means a modification as between themselves. In our case, it means virtually a revolution. And we are very concerned to see that in these circumstances, the common market countries themselves recognize our problems and the problems of the British Commonwealth. And so long as that is done, we are not afraid of going forward. And indeed, we don't want to put any obstacles in the way of the policy that is best for this country, whatever that may be.
There's recently been criticism, Mr. Woolley, of the support system for British farmers and the suggestion that housewives are paying twice for their food. What are your views on this?
Well, I think we can understand that because of the great increase that there has been in the estimates for agricultural support this year. But the truth of the matter is, and I think it's quite incontestable, that the consumer in this country is getting very good value indeed. If one takes the range of choice, the quality and the price, all these add up to a very satisfactory position for the consumer in this country compared to any other country in the world. Now, in the autumn of 1960, which are the latest figures we have, the ILO, that's the International Labour Organization, carried out a survey covering many countries in North America, in Europe, in Scandinavia. And one figure I can quote from that is that the price of sirloin then was about 5 shillings and 6 pence a pound in this country. The average for all the other countries where it was surveyed was about half a crown a pound more than that. It was in the region of between 7 and 6 and 8 shillings a pound. Now, even if you add on to that the few pence a pound that it costs through Treasury support, and it is only a few pence when you spread it over all the millions of pounds that are consumed, millions of pounds weight, it still makes a position in which the British housewife has an incomparably better position than the housewife in those other countries.